Today, the real costs of the bushfires. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest posts covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. I'm feeling a bit grumpy this morning because my fire alarm went off in the middle of the night. Not a problem in my own property, but the alarm was triggered by very high pollution caused by the bushfires as winds dropped overnight and the smog intensified. And I'd left my window open. Indeed, at 8 a.m. this morning, air quality data from the Office of Environment and Heritage rated 298 and was classified as very unhealthy by the World Air Quality Index, which is a non-profit project started in 2007. Its mission is to promote air pollution awareness for citizens and provide a unified and worldwide air quality information base. Bushfires release harmful air pollutants like carbon monoxide, nitrous oxide, and fine particulate pollution known as PM2.5, which can be transported long distances. Of particular concern, pun intended, is the sub 2.5 micron particles, which can trigger health problems, restrict outdoor activity, and turn the sun red, the moon orange, and the sky an insipid grey. Breathing in these tiny particulates can worsen asthma and other respiratory disorders and lead to heart attack and stroke, and is particularly harmful to older people, the very young, and people with compromised immune systems. This is what it looked like outside here earlier, and I've not seen the local escarpment for days. Visibility, as measured by the MEPH, remains severely restricted. And this has now been going on for weeks. Now, here is a video which The Conversation published today, and it shows the smoke coming from the bushfires and how it's been circulating, reaching right across New Zealand and beyond, as well as covering vast swathes of the country. The terrible air quality is unmatched in terms of severity, duration, and extent, and does nothing to promote the tourist delights of the country. Index readings above 2,550 have been recorded in Sydney, while the Monash monitoring site in Canberra reached a choking 5,185 at 8 p.m. on New Year's Day. An article published by AccuWeather has estimated the total cost of the bushfires will be in the region of $110 billion, including the direct and indirect impacts of the fires. That puts my own initial estimate of $30 billion in the dark. Westpac thinks it's closer to $5 billion, and AMP perhaps more than $10 billion. It's probably too soon to know, and it depends what you count in the numbers. But AccuWeather's estimate of economic losses includes damage to homes and businesses, as well as their contents and cars, jobs and wages losses, farm and crop losses, infrastructure damage, auxiliary business losses, school closures, and the costs of power outages to businesses and individuals, as well as the destruction of wildlife. The estimate also accounts for economic losses because of highway closures, evacuations, and increased insurance premiums throughout the affected areas, as well as reduced value of real estate across the country, firefighting costs, flight cancellations and delays, and the current and long-term residual health effects, including the risks of heart attacks rising and possibly bone marrow loss on those impacted by dirty air. Within $110 billion, Australia's tourism industry in particular figures to be hard hit. Although there is no published nationwide data on tourism since the fire started, Australia received 9.4 million visitors who spent $44.6 billion for the year ended September 2019. The top four destinations, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane and the Gold Coast, are all in fire-hit areas. And since tourism will be impacted for several years, the tourism losses over the next 3 years will, they estimate, total $32 billion of the total $110 billion loss. Now is the summer peak visitor season, the busiest and most profitable period for a lot of Australian tourism businesses, Simon Westaway, Executive Director of the Tourism Council, told the Wall Street Journal. And the damage to the tourism industry will be in stages. Immediately, with evacuations, dislocations and cancellations, but also in the longer term because tourists buy holidays based on the image of a destination, and Australia's is being badly affected, said Judith Mayer, a Queensland professor who studies tourism, environment and consumer behaviour, speaking to the Jakarta Post. Now, as Nancy Cushing, Associate Professor at the University of Newcastle, who was writing in The Conversation, said, historically, air pollution from smoke was considered outside human control and not subject to regulation. Bushfire smoke has affected the cities of New South Wales and the Australian Capital Territory in the past. In late January 1926, when Canberra was just emerging as a city, a thick haze of smoke sat over the site. Fires came within metres of Yarralumla, the residence which, the following year, would become home of the Governor-General. In several years, in the mid-1930s, bushfires burned to the north of Sydney and left the city air thick with smoke. In October 1936, bushfire smoke forced a motor liner arriving from Hong Kong to warily enter the harbour, sounding its siren because it was invisible to signallers on South Head. A New Zealand pilot flying into Sydney from Longreach the following month had to fly blind in, quote, great clouds of dense smoke covering much of New South Wales. And in 1939, Canberra was covered by what visiting writer H.G. Wells described as a streaming smoke curtain. In the summer of 1944, Sydney was again enveloped in a smoke haze, this time from fires in the Blue Mountains and later Royal National Park. In November, photographs published at the time showed the Sydney Harbour Bridge barely visible through dust and smoke at midday. The ongoing fires were blamed for an increase in disease of the ears, nose and throat, and for cases of influenza and pneumonia, leading to a shortage of hospital beds. In November 1951, all of New South Wales was said to be blacked out by bushfire smoke. In Sydney, on the worst days, records show that all four of the city's airfields were closed because of smoke fog. In each of these episodes, bushfire smoke disrupted transport, commerce, health, and the enjoyment of the urban environment. But even as other forms of air pollution began to be regulated, smoke from bushfires escaped legislative attention. What was understood as air pollution were the unwanted byproducts of industrial processes, whereas bushfire smoke was viewed as natural. In New South Wales in 1866, an act based on British legislation restricted smoke from mills, distilleries and gasworks. Further limitations on smoke production in built-up areas were included in later acts governing public health in 1902, motor traffic in 1909 and local government in 1919. After World War II, Newcastle, the site of the country's largest concentration of coal-burning heavy industry, began to pay closer attention to managing air quality. This pioneering work was given added urgency after 4,000 people died in heavy London smog in 1952. In 1958, a New South Wales Parliamentary Committee delivered a report into smoke abatement. It did not mention recent issues with bushfire smoke, and it also dismissed the impact of domestically produce smoke. The subsequent 1961 Clean Air Act focused on air pollution from industry, transport, and power generation. Air pollution legislation continued to evolve in following decades, targeting motor vehicle emissions in the 1970s, backyard burning of waste in the 1980s, and wood fires used to heat homes in the 1990s. These measures have been successful. A 2006 study found that between 1998 and 2003, on the limited occasions when standards for PM10 in six Australian cities were exceeded, the main source were not industry or transport, but dust storms and bushfires, with the exception of Launceston, where heating fires were the main contributor. As the Australian National University's Tom Griffiths has written, the current fires in some ways repeat patterns of the past, but the smoke is worse, more widespread, and today more enduring. Today's bushfire smoke is excluded from air quality regulations, despite its obvious role in pollution. It is still considered natural and beyond human control. When Australia begins the recovery from these fires, our business-as-usual approach requires a rethink, she said. Measures to protect air quality should be a major part of this. It is time that corporations, governments, and societies which contribute to global heating be held to account for more frequent, intense and widespread bushfires and the smoke which billows from them. The link between the current fires and human-caused climate change, long predicted by climate scientists, means we cannot just dismiss bushfire smoke as natural and move on. And consider this. Australia's annual industrial emissions budget in 2018-19 was 532 million tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent. This season's bushfires, which have burnt through more than 5 million hectares across the country so far, are estimated to have released two-thirds of this amount, or about 350 million tonnes of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere so far, according to an SMH article in the January. The 350 million tonne figure was extrapolated from data on NASA's Global Fire Emissions Database issued 2 weeks ago for New South Wales bushfires, which at that stage had burnt 2.7 million hectares and emitted 190 million tonnes of carbon dioxide. CSIRO's most recent State of the Climate report found that since the 1950s, there has been a long-term increase in extreme fire weather in Australia and in the length of the fire seasons across large parts of the continent. 8 of Australia's 10 warmest years on record have occurred since 2005, and winter rain, which helps reduce the intensity of summer fires, has declined significantly. So my point is that the total costs and financial impact on Australia of the bushfires is going to be significant and profound. But to my mind, it still does leave the question open as to whether we're really going to be serious about tackling some of the underlying causes of these issues. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.